The information we have as up to now is that there are officials from South Africa that have been sent to go and assist in working in the rubble and the debris around that area to see if they can assist to find more bodies. The president has also directed departments, now the relevant departments, that includes, I think, our High Commission there. We are represented by His Excellency Louis Nguni in Nigeria, and other departments it could be the Department of Defense, the President Sue and Attaché, and in industry, it could be Home Affairs, it could be Decor, etc., etc. All of those factors are assisting to see what can be done to get the police that belong to South Africa. And the President has then directed that whatever body they find must be repatriated back to South Africa for burial. I have, was just one contact or incident. I have this morning been phoned by somebody from Gwanebele, Siabuso, who said that there is a family of Gwamashango, their son actually traveled to that place and they suspect he or she may have died there. I think he may have died there. So I was unable to be very clear which department they must specifically contact. I said, well, try the Department of International Relations, and then I gave him the address. But I also said, go to the airport, get this piece that is left in the airport of the boarding pass. And then that the department, I mean the president has already issued a statement, try in the much better, then you can get some more contact. That's all I would say. It was about 7 o'clock this morning. I don't have much information. So in this regard, that's how far we can go. I suspect, and I'm not sure if it's correct to use the word suspect, I sense that the chief will, on behalf of the house, will table a motion without notice in this respect for parliament. I think the chief will deal with that. With that, I would like to bring this matter to a close, not unless there are some questions from some members. Can I allow that? Deputy Minister?
Chair, I raised this matter with members of the official protocol. It's one of those things that we seem to be aware of and can't get ahead of.
Deputy Minister, can you raise your voice?
All right. It's one of those issues that we arise from time to time and we they happen and they pass and that is stand. It revolves around whether our nationals, when they leave the country, should touch base with our officers in other countries. When they are in distress, I think the word was used by members of the DA in the question, when they are in distress, in other words, when they are being arrested, or they fall ill, or they are party to a tragedy like this one, you will inevitably find people saying, but you people in Dhaka are supposed to know that our family members are there, our acquaintances and our sick. And this is where the difficulty lies. There's no obligation on the part of the person who's leaving the country to touch base with Dhaka's missions, consulates, and IRRs. And so the question is, should that be made compulsory? And how does that affect the person's rights? Would some people genuinely want to leave there without, it's private business, it has nothing to do with government, quite rightly so. that's the difficulty that has always arisen from time to time when tragedies like this occur. And so I just reflect therefore for yourself and members of the portfolio committee to think about. I'm not suggesting that it be made compulsory. I have undertaken trips, Jefferson, with other members of Parliament. And on one occasion we were in New York and I suggested to the delegation that we pay a courtesy call on our ambassador. The members of the delegation said no. Why should we? And the debate or the discussion revolved around that. So I'm just putting it there for you to think about, and perhaps your portfolio committee members can come up with a solution. Because 67 is a lot. And everyone, just about everyone you meet, are curious to know who the 67 are. Are they more, are they less? All we have at this point is that we think there are 67. There may be more, there may be less.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Monsami, Andre Tainkale. Yes, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just asking for clarity in terms of the information process if South Africans are either living in groups or independently. I recall there was a point at which it was indicated that there's a website that South Africans... I wonder the extent to which this has been communicated and whether there has been major statements or there has been sufficient work done in communicating such information. Because we are finding more and more that there are disasters happening all over the world, and do our people know who to contact, where they are, and before they leave? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kenny.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the information. Just want to check if are there any investigations done, not to what is happening at Nigeria. Are there any investigations done to check if this is not the collapse of the building or the Boko Haram operations so far? Just want to check if there are any investigations to check what is happening. The collapse that is the building. Accidental collapse or liberation.
Thank you very much. Honorable Atebe.
Thank you, Jefferson. I really appreciate the notion that you put this item on the agenda. I think that we know very well that the world has changed now. There are certain things which people were supposed to do voluntarily. I know that on the Department of International Relations, there's this roster which you, as a person, as a South African, when you're traveling across, just touch base with them so that they can know your whereabouts, so that if there's any tragedy, they're able to go and assist you as necessary. But I think, Chair President, that as this committee, we must actually think, consider, that we make that compulsory as we're moving in the future. Because even if the person goes there voluntarily on his or her own, but the ANC, they should entirely okay. At the end of the day, the state is going to be involved. That's the bottom line. So I think that in order to help the state, the people must be, it must be mandatory for them that when you're going abroad, you must report where you're going to. And then, but very fortunate that as a country, that these people who were there, they went there for peaceful purposes, whereby they went to the church to go and pray, whatever they did. That's very fortunate. But when you look in other countries here, people go and involve themselves in the foreign world which are not of that country. So I think that the issue of people reporting, the South African citizens reporting, is something which must really consider as the portfolio committee, that it is mandatory that the people must report where they are going to, so that they don't involve themselves in the world which the country is not involved in. And then number two, Chair, I think that as the portfolio committee, I think that we must instruct our department to send our condolences to the people of Nigeria as a whole, because this is a tragedy of mass proportions. As Comrade Kenny has just said right now, which you can look at the way that building collapsed, it's as if you can see determine that, you know, just like the demolition jobs, because it fell at the same time, just like that. Usually, if it is the issue of the shoddy work, the legal hand on one side was Herman, but this one was official. So on that regard, really, will urge our government to support the government of Nigeria and the people of Nigeria to go to the bottom of this issue, so that if there's any discussion, it must be eliminated. But really, we are with the people of Nigeria at this third moment as our partners in the AU. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Hello, Kalia.
Thank you, Chairperson. I take the point that Deputy Minister has raised, and I would want to say that this falls within two departments. It's the Home Affairs, it's when you leave the country, the passport is stamped, and when you enter the country, obviously you're ending with a visa. That slip of paper or is taken and kept behind. And it's a honorable thing to want everyone to clock in as to when they arrive at their destination. And it's good because it's in their interest and they would know, you know, that they're supported at the other end. However, would the mission be able to cope with this? Do they have resources and manpower, and where would they be situated? These are things that we would have to consider, because my thinking is you would want to have us at the airport, because the missions are usually, you know, away from the airport in a secluded area, mainly because of security. So these are some of the things that need to be fleshed out before we can say it is mandatory. I think there are processes and procedures in place, which at the moment are adequate, and I think immigration or section of Home Affairs needs to be involved in that. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Colleague. There are no further comments. Well, some comments were actually sought clarity, particularly from Honourable Monson, whether there's a center that could communicate information. I just got a document here that there is a registration of South Africans abroad. It's called the RASPAT. Now, because it's just a piece of paper sent by a content advisor, I want to request them to speak to that. Where is it? Who to contact? Can you speak to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Within the DECO, other consular services, there is a mechanism for registration of South African support called ROSA. And that mechanism is meant to, for South Africans traveling abroad, to register with the embassies, with all our embassies abroad. But there are challenges with regard to the fact that DECO cannot, their mandate is beyond borders of South Africa. But within South Africa, there is need to for collaboration between DECO and Home Affairs, so that South Africans traveling abroad can be aware of this. The other challenge, Chairperson, is popularization of SOSA by both, I think, both the department and the nations abroad, to make sure that South Africans are aware of this. And maybe it also falls under the oversight strategy of the committee to see how far they can enhance the popularization of this. The other thing is the willingness of South Africans themselves to actually comply with this requirement. But there is a system in place.
Yeah, I have heard you, but I didn't hear you saying the offices are at such a place, the contact person is such a person. Minister, do you want to assist?
If I may, Chairperson, yes, the something that I've advised is quite correct. There is a DERCO website, it's called derco.gov.za, and you'll be able to access ROSA via that website. Content advisor is also correct. There are challenges. We've been trying through our public diplomacy division to popularize this aspect, not with very much success. Tragically, it's these 67 deaths that may now force us to change our approach. Just to make the point, Chairperson, ROSA is an acronym for registration of South Africans abroad. The information in ROSA is only accessed by DIKO when an emergency occurs. And the emergency could be an illness, accident, arrest, and the collapse of the building in Nigeria. So there is that. It shouldn't be hard then to convey that information if somebody from your constituency or your province wants additional information. Of course, if they don't have access to the internet, then you would have to refer them to the COVID quarters in Pretoria, and those contact details are easily available in the telephone direction. The Honourable Kalyan is quite correct. The question of capacity and resources is very relevant, and we need to look at it, as well as the content advisor and others have pointed out, collaboration between DIRGO and the Department of Home Affairs.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'm going to assist you, but Zongile, I'm talking about the name Zongile Maputi. Shouldn't you get the website, the telephone number, the fax number of ROSA, and then send it to the channel that is accessed by all commercial and public broadcasting startups, community radios everywhere. As long as they will accept that number, then it must say, the committee says, if people travel over abroad, Mapalisela, like in Utah, Wanda, Nigeria, Manja, Jalanga, something like that. At least it's 2 million something there. Maybe they assist. With regard to the letter raised by Honorable Kenya and later raised by Honorable Khatere, at this stage, I would advise that perhaps we leave it to the Nigerian intelligence services. They may discover that the manner in which that department in that building collapsed could be man-made. Well, it's even man-made because perhaps the capacity and architecture of that building was such that it was poor workmanship by the engineer. But if it's because of Boko Haram, they will also unearth that. I think they'll be able to tell the world. Yeah, let's leave this matter as I can latch into item number 4. Briefing by the Department on African Union, Agenda 2063. Honorable ladies and gentlemen, you will remember that the minister requested, or the department through the minister requested, that a presentation should be made to a joint sitting of the House. And the proclaiming committee proposed the 19th of September. And that date has since been changed to somewhere in October. We don't have a firm date. I spoke with the minister yesterday. She did not have a firm date because the determination of the date will be made by Parliament. But we felt that before that presentation to the joint sitting of Parliament is done on African Agenda 2063, the members of this portfolio committee must be walked through a presentation where they can have a very meaningful engagement, so that by the day it comes into the House, you are able, if for instance you are one of the speakers, you are able to engage a debate in a very cogent manner. So we are very happy that the department has sent the deputy minister responsible for this committee, deputy minister Lennart. Deputy minister Lennart is going to give us a strategic conceptual overview, and he will be able assistant. I'm saying able, you can use one. Sandeep. No. I may withdraw ably at some point if you don't do it well. He will be ably assisted by your good sir, the outstanding Skunk. Sandile Skunk is dealing with Africa Multilateral. So I invite a competent person to speak to the subject. We'll then allow members to make an engagement with the subject, and then after that we'll deal with the last item. I want to raise a witness though from our side in our official. Where is Masale? Because I thought I'd speak a corner. He has moved out. Yeah. Those who have observed either him or you or another person would know that you bring our documents very late. You bring them in the morning, you bring them when the meeting is running, people are, papers are being thrown to their members. And I think it's a very serious weakness. Maybe the chair has been tempting that. I should have been telling you now. You know, honorable members are leaders of organizations and are members of their organizations. They must read so that they can debate in a very competent manner. So for them to be able to do all of these things, ask questions, do all of these things, they must be provided with the documents in time. At least the day before. And even the day before, not enough, but at least the day before, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 9 o'clock, together, but I have a lot of one to have a full night journey. The following day, by a baton of a presentation. It's very, very important. I'll speak to my brother about this weakness, so I'll be correct. But, you are taking things too far, but you know, a South African who might be speaking somewhere one day, maybe going to speak in an international conference somewhere. You are representing or you are the face of South Africa. And you can't go there. Well, you speak, can't be understood with you, what they talk about. And we lower the image of the country because we speak, kind of empty as we speak there. So, through sufficient and enough information and papers to act, see who was a presenter, either our organizations or our countries, anywhere within the country, in parliament and everywhere. I want to witness an I call it can't be right. That's my instruction. Over to the deputy minister.
Chairperson, thank you. I'll also take this up with Masela and look at ways that how we can ensure that this doesn't happen again. Chairperson, you have asked us to make a presentation, a briefing to this portfolio committee on Agenda 2063. Agenda 2063 seeks to address a simple and yet fundamental question, which is, what kind of Africa would we like to live in the year 2063? Why 2063? Well, in 2013, Africa celebrated the 50th anniversary of the OAU, and in 2063, it'll be 100 years. Now, 2063, some of us won't be here, myself included, but our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren will be here. So the question applies whether you will still be alive in 2063 or not. So Sunday the Scott will be doing, Chairperson, is taking you through the processes that have been followed thus far to get us where we are right now. As far as the department is concerned, the legal department, we have engaged with civil society groups, amongst others the youth. I was present at that particular meeting or conference of youth in DACO's headquarters. Yesterday, I'm told DELCO had engagement with women, also at DELCO headquarters. There's been an engagement with academics from a variety of universities, and the intention is also to engage with the business community and other civil society organizations. They will all be making inputs into the concept of Agenda 2063, the Africa we would like to see.
flooding in 2016. And some of those issues was Jonathan allowed to hand over to Sandra to take you from this presentation. Thank you.
Mr. Scott. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members of the portfolio committee, I take this opportunity to appreciate your, through the minister, your invitation to us as a Democrats to come brief you on agenda in 63. Chairperson, the agenda in 63 stems from the meeting of heads of state and government that took place in May 2013. In May 2013, Addis Ababa, the African Union commemorated the 50th anniversary. And it did so by taking into account the history, what has transpired over the last 50 years, looking at the achievements that were made. And on the basis of that, during the celebration, then the heads of state and government signed a declaration, a solemn declaration. In the declaration, they identified 8 key elements. The 8 key issues that outlined in the declaration, Chairperson, are 1, the African identity and renaissance. 2, the struggle against colonialism and right to self-determination of people still under colonial rule. 3, the integration agenda. 4, agenda for social and economic development. 5, the agenda for peace and security, democratic governance. 6, 7, determining Africa's destiny. And the 8th one, Chairperson, being Africa's place in the world. They discussed and agreed on this solemn declaration. On the basis of that, they mandated the African Union Commission to start working on a conceptual framework document projecting Agenda 2063. What they given, the instruction that they gave, was that they should look at, the commission should look at a plan, strategic plan for the next 50 years. How Africa should build an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa. An Africa that is even managed by its own citizens and people. And an Africa that will be able to express itself fully and independently in the international arena. Upon this instruction, the chairperson of the AU convened a meeting in Senegal, a meeting of the African Development Bank, the meeting of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, as well as the other academics, the international academics, African academics, and civil society organizations, to start basically to work on a conceptual document on Agenda 2063. What then happened is that they then work on, they came up with a framework document, just as a concept, framework document, with the view to then request, to then ask member states to look into it and see what inputs they can then bring. They then equally requested that the member states should then forward their national plan, like what we did in South Africa, the National Development Plan, to the AU, and then that will then be used to actually work on the conceptual framework document on Agenda 2063. What then means, Chairperson, in the AU's approach, Agenda 2063 is an approach to how the continent should effectively learn from lessons of the past, build on the progress currently underway, and strategically exploit all possible opportunities available in the short, medium, and long term, so as to ensure a positive socio-economic transformation within the next 50 years. On the basis of that, the team of experts looked at the current, the existing development plans. They looked at the Abuja Treaty. They looked at the Lagos Plan of Action. They equally looked at NEPAD and identified some of the key challenges facing the initial plans, NEPAD, Lagos Plan of Action, the Abuja Treaty, whose challenge is basically centered around the time frames. Time frames were not very clear. 2, the question of continuous evaluation was not really built into the initial initial plan. What we are seeking to do now with Agenda 2063 is to take into account all the weaknesses that have been identified in the previous plans, and then ensure that Agenda 2063 then addresses those weaknesses. In doing that, Chairperson, then the AU Commission worked on the development of what is called a popular version, Agenda 2063, that is the Africa that we want. It then identified 8 aspirations. Aspirations that are actually stemming from the key areas that have been identified in the declaration. For example, Chairperson, Aspiration 1 talks about a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development. In other words, it is aimed basically at eradicating poverty and build shared prosperity through social and economic transformation on the continent. Aspiration 2, Chairperson, talks to an integrated continent that's politically united based on the ideals of Pan-Africanism and the vision of Africa's united. It then traces the quest for African unity since 1963, which was basically inspired by the spirit of Pan-Africanism with a clear focus on the liberation, political and economic independence. It is equally motivated by the development based on self-reliance, self-determination of African people with democratic and people-centered government. Aspiration 3, Chairperson, talks to an Africa of good governance, democracy, respect for human rights, justice, and the rule of law. What you then envisage there, Chairperson, is a culture of good governance, democratic values, gender equality, respect for human rights, justice, and the rule of law. Under Aspiration 4, it talks to areas with specific reference to peace and security. It envisages a peaceful and secure Africa based on the current work that has been done in silencing guns by 2020. There are mechanisms in this respect, and the AU Peace and Security Council is related with the work of on addressing this question of silencing guns by 2020. Aspiration 5 refers to an Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage, values and ethics. In other words, Chairperson, it takes into account the common history, destiny, the identity, the heritage, respect for religious diversity, and the consciousness of African peoples and its diaspora. That should basically be entrenched in Agenda 2063. Aspiration 6, Chairperson, refers, and the honorable members, refers to an Africa where development is people-driven, unleashing the potential of its own youth. Aspiration 7 refers to an Africa that is strong, that's united, that is playing an influential global, that is an influential global player as well as partner. It sees an Africa that is strong, that's united, that is resilient, that is really influential in the global arena on issues that are directly affecting our continent. These are the key aspirations that have been derived from the eight key aspects that we referred to in the declaration of the head of the Indian government. So what is the current process, Chairperson, now is that the AUC has not been able, the African Union Commission has not been able to put together the conceptual document on the basis of the fact that a number of member states have not had the opportunity to engage the citizens, so that they can make the necessary input for the member states to member countries of the African Union to then make their submissions to the African Union. So what the date that has been given now since the last summit in July is the 31st of August or 31st of October. The request thereof is that by the 31st of October, member states should then submit their input to the African Union Commission. So for the input then to be put together so that the report is then presented to the summit of heads of state and government that will be sitting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia in January. As a country, Chairperson, we are working towards that date. I must say, as the Deputy Minister has alluded to, on the basis of the outcome of the AU summit, that member states should start working and soliciting input from the citizens, all stakeholders, so that they can inform the country's input into the AUC. Basically, it's also one of the weaknesses that we identified in the three other plans that we alluded to earlier, the Abuja Treaty, the Lagos Plan of Action, and the NEPA. A people-driven program, that way, that's very, very critical. So this, what's happening now, ECO has been working on the organization of the consultative forum. We've had a meeting with youth, National Youth Consultation, where the youth of South Africa across the provinces were brought into Pretoria to really discuss Agenda 2063 and to answer the key questions as to what is Africa that we want in the next in 2063. So the youth have done that with their applications and they've made the submissions. Last 2 weeks ago, we also had the meeting of academics across the different institutions of higher learning who also came to Pretoria, again addressing the question of Africa that we want in 2063 and identifying the key areas in the agenda, in the current draft document, because it has not yet been endorsed by the African Union Heads of State and Government Summit. Yesterday, we had a national consultation with women in Pretoria. They also came from the different provinces and different associated organizations as well to also make an input towards the Agenda 2063. Following that, separately will be the meeting of business as well to actually come in and look at Agenda 2063. And it was equally identified, Jefferson, the number of South African businesses that are doing work in the continent to play a meaningful role also in the Africa that they are envisaging so that they can input substantially to the process as well. We are again working together with the Department of Arts and Culture towards the Heritage Day to also have cultural activity there. Again, with a clear focus on Agenda 2063. The method of work, the person that we have been using on this is that has been that of looking at the aspiration. We break into commissions, the 8 commissions, along the lines of the aspiration. For example, the aspiration 1, a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development, gets the commission to really look at that. So, and then make the necessary inputs along the line, same way with the other aspirations, where we are actually trying to direct the inputs to really get to all of those elements. So we are working on that, Chairperson, and the following all these processes share would be that the request that the minister made of the joint meeting of parliament, during which Agenda 2063 will then be presented by the minister and be debated upon. So we're still working on that. All this report, our hope is that the sitting of parliament and the minister's report to parliament should take into account all the inputs coming from all the national consultative conferences that we've had. So that is one comprehensive input that will then be looked at by parliament before submission. To the African Union Commission by the 31st of June or towards the 15th of November, September. And again, on this one, we're also looking at the request of the AU as well, Commission as well, and the African Union Heads of State and Government. In January, what happened in Addis Ababa, the AU chairperson will be making a presentation to the Heads of State and Government, to the summit, on the broader framework on Agenda 2063. And following that will also be a presentation on the first 10-year review, the 10-year review plan for Agenda 2063. That will then talk to the continuous evaluation of the plan as it is being implemented. We've also brought the chairperson the documentation from the conferences that we've organized in here. The document that you have, chairperson, the booklet that we have is a booklet that talks to one, the email from the email from the future. This is the email Chairperson and an honorable member that the chair of the AU has written, reporting to Kwame Nkrumah in 2063 on the Africa, that is, on what Africa would look like. This is the port. It's the, what we brought in now. We will then be submitting to the committee, the booklet. The booklet that we got. That, that they have both, they've got the email from the chairperson, Dr. Nkrumah, Kwame Nkrumah. They've got then the aspiration document, which is then called the popular version, as well as the declaration that was signed by the head of state and government for submission to the committee. Chairperson, we will then solicit your the advice, guidance from the committee and honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Well, I will come back for a comment. But I just wanted to add just one small focus, which is that we're talking about the 50 years ago and the 50 years later. The 50 years ago refers to the formation or establishment of the Organization of African Unity on the 25th of May 1963. And the principal and strategic focus of the leadership of the African continent at that time was to assist in the process of the decolonization and the liberation of the African countries that were still under colonial rule, whether the colonial authority was British or French, Belgian or German, etc. And that process was concluded at least by 1994. Notwithstanding a few other countries that are still under colonial rule, like the Western Sahara and others. But there are a few others. But that constitutes your 50 years ago. And what this leadership did in 2013, they looked at 50 years ago, they said this much has been achieved. But then they said there are weaknesses. There are weaknesses because our attention referring to them. Their attention was on crossing the liberation process. But there were weaknesses like paying attention to infrastructure development, increasing intra-African trade and connectivity. So when they conceived NEPAD, they found that, but how do you do this when you've got underdeveloped airports, your roads, your electricity, your electricity generation, your connectivity, your mountains, your rivers, between yourselves and all of the things, they bedevil in African trade. So they then said, okay, in the next 50 years, we'll be paying attention to some of the issues, and I'm saying some, and you've enumerated most of them. We'll then pay attention to most of, or to some of the following things that must make sure that the Africa we want, at least by 2063, all of us must have done certain things. So I'm happy, Deputy Minister, that they took a decision not to walk over the head of the citizen. To say each member state, through its consultative processes, including its legislature, its national legislature, in our case, even provincial legislatures, business people, young people, the women, the disabled persons, everyone else, must say, that is the South Africa we want by 2063. I noted that there are some questions that I think you didn't mention, but I don't want to mention that. All I wanted to assist with is just this dichotomy of 50 years ago and 50 years later. We are very, indeed, very kind, Deputy Minister, to posterity. You know, we speak for them 20 years later when we would not be there. They are the lucky ones, like a father will leave a will for the children. They left nothing for some of us. Sorry about that. Okay, that's okay. Then Khadele wants to have the first bite, followed by Malila, KS, let me write it down, followed by Rapu, did you have up? Okay. Khadele, thank you very much, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. We really welcome this Agenda 2063 item on our portfolio committee meeting. Really, also, I concur with the aspirations which are articulated today. But the issue I'm going to have, Chair, is that this process must be as inclusive as possible. Chair, for example, you go to the issue of peaceful and secure South Africa, and the aspiration number 3, good governance, democracy, respect of human rights. I see what the director said, has identified the youth, women, academics, plus the civic community. But I think there's one element which is being left out, the workers' organization. Where are they involved in the process? Because they also have a stake in building the future of the country. And then on the issue of the civil society organizations, I think that in order to have a peaceful and secure Africa, the faith-based organization must also be involved directly. We know that this is the thing we have because of the classes of the first brothers faith. We must address that by ensuring that all the faith-based organizations are part of that so that they can be able to input in moving forward. And then also, what is very critical, I see that yes, we are the department has got a long outreach. I think that also the judiciary of the country must be involved so that they can shape up the type of human rights we want, the type of court we want as we move forward to 2063. Because the issue of human rights care must be part and parcel of that agenda. Because if we are going to have a prosperous Africa without the Council of Human Rights, it would be a lost cause. So those are the three things I wanted to raise. But on the issue, Chair, of the joint sitting, I think it was appropriate that the Minister requested the joint sitting of Parliament so that all the eyes of the country must be on that stage. But very fortunately, we are having time. That's why we are blessed that this debate is not on the 19th. It gives us some time, Chair, to prepare for us. So what we are having here is that we are having one of the founding members of the Organization of African Unity, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, who is still around. And then after you share your office, that when we do that debate, he can also be invited so that he can see the work which they initiated in 1963, where it's going to. And then number 2, Chair, also at the same time, during the transition from the OAU to the AU, there was a key speaker which was also involved. The former President of the Republic, His Excellency Thabo Mbeki, he was the first chairperson of the African Union. I think that when we really debate on that day, he must be invited. But because there are also former presidents of the country who are still around, Comrade Halima Mutale, the former president, Hitler, they must also be invited so that they can see that once they've done, their work was not in vain. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mai.
Thank you very much, Chair President. So, Chair President, I also welcome...
Speak to the mic.
I also welcome the visionary leadership of the African continent. I only have a slight concern, Chair President, on aspiration 2, on an integrated continent politically united based on the ideas of pan-Africanism and the vision of African desires. I don't have a problem with this aspiration. I have a problem with the way in which at times African countries are merged to their colonial past, in the sense that at times we find African countries who are called Francophone countries and Anglophone countries approach political matters in that perspective, that we are African, we are Francophone, and we are Anglophone. And as a result, that defeats the idea of uniting the African agenda. This thing is sometimes even in sport. When we have to present a united front, we get to the world stage fragmented. And this, and I think it's about time that we wake up and to achieve move ahead as Africa and have an African agenda. Thank you.
Sure. Honorable Kenya.
Thank you for the presentation. I think I've covered partly my honorable family, but also to take my say what to say, also on the invitation, also what I'm also like to want to be open in my head, because I think he also needed in this debate. And you said that on the 1st of October, their input to the commission to the population for the summit of senior 2015. I also share the same sentiment that I wonder if it works now in September. I just want to check if it is possible really to make a clear outreach program as honorable and having that said. I was also concerned about the advocates. That's why I was he spoke about the faith organizations. I also concerned about South Africa Catholic churches, which to my understanding they should be part of having the input. Also including international leaders. Because you can see also they are not included in this program of this world. There are those people that we will need as many people as enrichment of many. I think that's where you can get more people in those areas, including what when we had to start talking about the workers. I was also concerned about the workers. One was there when we talk about yesterday saying we got the canal identity. Common health care and development, and God must already engage the agriculture. If you can just add those, which I think they must be the churches taking the southern church of service, which encompasses all of them, so that you don't forget students well in there. And then I think that's all the question I wanted to add.
Thank you for your addition. See, no tea there, Honorable Mabuti.
I'm taking the cue to welcome the presentation. Yes, it's very exciting, inspiring. I can say in another way, it's Africa's development plan. And especially with this bulging of Africa with youth, I think it's really going to bring more energy, you know, to our youth in Africa and South Africa as a whole. And really, it's a good story to tell. And to tell those who are coming behind us, to tell them that this is the future. They must take it with two hands. And it's a good legacy that we are going to leave for the future generation to come. But I think we should really popularize it to the entire, you know, stakeholders, you know, in our communities, you know, to popularize this agenda 2063. A good story to tell. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kalia.
Thank you, Chairperson. I had the privilege of listening to Madam and Dr. Donna Jamie, who made this presentation a month ago at the South African Parliament at the Speaker's Conference. And it was after that I put a question to the Minister as to whether she would make a statement on Agenda 2063. The presentation is good, but I have to ask why and what is the role of the parliamentarians in all of this? What is it that you want parliamentarians to do? I hear that you have various focus groups and you are engaging with them. But at the end of the day, if Parliament doesn't drive this and if we don't play an active role, it's not going to get very far. So how about the details and the specifics on what the role of Parliament is about this? What is the link between the Africa peer review mechanism and this agenda? That report has not yet been tabled in Parliament. It was presented, I think, in the third Parliament, and it has yet to be debated. But what is the link between the APRM and achieving the objects of, I'm talking specifically about Africa now. What is the link between Agenda 2063 and the post-15 development agenda. There has to be a link, and 2015 is just around the corner. We haven't debated that either. And then my last question, Parliament, there's a research document which was in our pack, and Chairperson, I might just like to say, it's all very well to receive research document, but if you don't know who the author of the document is, there's no way you can interact with that person. And it's something that I have requested the research unit to always put there, whoever the authors of the document is. But Parliament are expected to ensure that budgetary resources are allocated towards the achievement of Agenda 2063. So I'd like to know what budget is allocated, where is it coming from, and what is the linkage in terms of inter-ministerial action. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Monsami.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that I want to start by defending the Secretary because he gave us the documents a while before. The only one we did not receive was the presentation. Because I could see he was looking very stressed there, and I was worried about him. Because David was saying people get high blood pressure and all of that when they come to Parliament. So I just wanted to make sure that. So we see, but I was hoping if we got this presentation earlier, it would have been able to reconcile a few things. The information in the presentation is not necessarily a proper reflection of what the situation is. It stops a lot of the graphs that are stopped in 2009. We should have had a further projection. But also give us a sense of the trends, because some of them are a little bit disjointed, I think, in terms of the information that Agenda 2063 is trying to project, and whether there is a sense of structuring around that information towards the political, social, and economic outcomes that are expected to be achieved by Agenda 2063. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that I'm receiving some guidelines. I'll tell you why I disagree with it. I was hoping, because I was looking at the end in terms of consultations, the extent to which consultations would be done. You know, this is an opportunity for the continent. And I want to stress that because I think that I don't want alignment to the National Development Plan, because I think that that would not be the situation that the country should ideally want to take the continent towards. But it is an opportunity, I believe, that we must not miss, because it gives you a sense in terms of what consultation has been done and how that consultation should be done. I think one of the things that's very critical, because the document touches on it as one of the aspirations, is the issue of this and whether there has been sufficient consideration that has been made. Because if you're planning and the Deputy Minister's conference is not going to be here, I know I'm going to be here. Yes. And I want to just check that those that are being consulted with, at what extent is the consultation representative of young people? Now I'm saying this because you might find that you speak to youth in Durko. But when you go to the AU and you consult, or you consult here, the 1% youth, and then you consult with 5% youth in Durko, and the population of the continent is youthful. So I'm checking whether your consultations are consistent in terms of those demographics, because it is a massive issue that you are going to be faced with. You know, if you are not here in a short while, then Agenda 2063 will be scrapped, because no one is going to identify with it. So I'm just saying, in terms of the planning, the extent to which the consultation has thoroughly considered, ensuring that at each point of aspiration, and how, because I see there, I broke it down a little bit, but I'm not going to go into too much of detail because it's still in a draft form. I see under aspiration something with women and youth, and you put targets, but the target is 50%. And I don't think that you should be so conservative with the 50% on aspiration 6, on the 50%, but you still have you still have the focus on the gender parity. I think the youth, there's still some reservation. And I suspect that the reservation is political, but I just want to caution as outside responsibility that you can't be, you know, conservative about the reality that is unfolding. Because the only ground that I can confidently agree with, because I also have my own analysis of this information, is the one that you have on the demographic dividend. I don't think that the demographic dividend in the continent, you know, it was a broader concept that came from the United Nations report on a special report that was done, I think, in 2005 or something like that. And that report alone was not represented sufficiently by Africa. So what doesn't give us, I think, and why it takes me to the next point, is the extent to which we have African think tank that we can rely on to give the kind of guidance. Because the cultural aspect, Aspiration 5, for me, I don't think that the cultural identity and values, because this is where the issue of pan-Africanism needs to be the strongest. It needs to become part of the identity of the 50 years moving forward of the continent, in my observation. It should not just be about folklore and, you know, those kinds of things. It should be a deeper understanding of what pan-Africanism is. I'm saying this because currently in the European Union is moving towards a new cultural identity of pan-Europeanism. It's starting to redefine its colonial heritage. And I have a problem with the Honourable Member says, I'm not fighting with him, but I have a problem with the Honourable Member says that we must not be speaking too much about our colonial history, etc. We need to speak about it more. Because the issues that are seemingly ideological and theoretical are coming through different forms of entry into the continent. Now I'm saying this because I think that on Aspiration 5, we might not have a chance to, because I know it's around anything else. I'm not convinced by it, because it doesn't represent, you know, form, what is that? You must be able to create a sense of consciousness, I think, if you're speaking about cultural identity, common heritage, values, and ethics, etc. But I think that on the points that have been raised on Aspiration 1, or I think it is 2, for me, I think, in as much as we want to create a nice document that seems to have, with a point of strategy level, you'll be able to see the details of a plan and how it will be step by step in terms of its infrastructure, in terms of education, what is achieved, etc. The one thing that I would really want Aspiration 2 to be able to speak about is how, on paragraph 20, by 2020, and why are we not speaking about, I think I haven't seen it, maybe if the presenter can direct me, on what then becomes the continent's relationship in terms of strengthening implementation of resolutions that lie outside of the African Union, especially in relation to colonized states under paragraph 20 on page 5. Because for me, I think that that has been something we've been just speaking about. This is like a message, just speak and speak and speak about liberation of Western Sahara liberation, and then nothing is happening about it. So what are we saying? If that is the case, if there's no implementation of the UN resolution, etc. But I think equally, this document under this Aspiration 2 should be able to speak to co-oppressors within the continent. And we should be able to say, because we can't speak as if it's one just wonderful a program that we have without understanding what is it that is happening amongst ourselves in the continent and where, and speak strongly, I think, about, I know we need to maintain relations, but the African Union does not have, you know, that responsibility in terms of how it is able to separate itself from a situation where there are co-oppressors within the continent. As far as it covers child soldiers, I thought that maybe those are some of the things that would be the stronger issues around securing a peaceful and secure, but also I thought it would give a stronger outline on the issues of terrorism in the continent. And then I think the issue of introducing an African passport is a very exciting thing, especially, you know, the concern is the abolishment of visa requirements. And I think that it's not something that we must take lightly, especially if we want to build an integrated Africa and have the kinds of benefits of integrated Africa. But also, I think visa requirements and all of the things that have an exclusionary effect. But for me, I think one of the things in the document, why it doesn't concern me, is because in as much as it's speaking to issues of, I know it goes there on the last aspiration, I would have hoped that the document would tell us, it would be able to separate us in the sense of the sovereignty of the continent. Because if you look at, for example, the situation of imports, exports, and our reliance on changing that kind of trade infrastructure, but also in terms of just the general African economy, I was hoping that at some point would be able to give a clear outline of how co-dependency within the continent outside of creating integration. Because I agree that integration, economic integration and all those things are there, the infrastructure and all of those things, because I raised it in the last meeting. But for me, I must say that I've tried to understand the regional economic communities, bit by bit. And maybe there should have been a proposal on an infrastructure or a kind of a integrated continental economy. Because just to suggest that the economic, those Mesa and all of those are one, ECOWAS and everything are there. The reality of it is that they have never been useful all of the time. And they have not yielded any benefits, economic benefits, to even each other, to build their regional blocks. You haven't seen it being that kind of regional support. Actually, it does most work outside. And in so doing, I think I would have also wanted us to think on the issue of the economy, how we would be able to completely relieve ourselves from structural adjustment programs, debt, etc. What is the political stance of this agenda in terms of these structural adjustment programs that are there that continue to make us not a global player, but us being dependent on some... And finally, I think the issue of financial institutions. In relation to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well, they will respond, but the only bailout I can offer for now, is that the document is not complete. It's not a complete product. The document is consultative. So the kind of questions you are raised, in fact, invite some worthy input that you could make, and indeed they are most welcome, because even as you ask, it is clear that the persons you put are very educated, and culturally speaking, they also say agenda for which people. Is it Africans and then how African? It's very, very important. So I'll be very happy if people like you, either as a group or as individuals, can also take this discussion document and make some input to ensure that when you are redeployed to eternity before 2063, the brains are left with us, just in case. I also want to make some few inputs. I said I'll come back. And to start with, let me welcome the presentation by both the Deputy Minister and Mr. Skalk. Indeed, all of us must be engaged in this process. Now, just to go back a little bit, with regard to the commitment that the current leadership of Africa must have. It is that we actually stand on the very broad shoulders of people who conceived Pan-Africanism. You would remember that there was the conference in 1945 in Manchester, where the African diaspora met and spoke about the importance of decolonizing Africa, including the Caribbean states, Malaysia, I mean, all of the countries. And the next conference that was held, 1955, in Bandung. All of these were building blocks that led to the decolonization, freedom, and the independence of the first African country against Switzerland under President Nkrumah and Nkrumah and Nkrumah to the south. So, I say this because this issue that has been raised by Honorable Maila about divisions among Africans, that they are Anglophone, they are Francophone, or they are Lusophone, is very artificial. And the engagement to ourselves as the leadership of Africa is that we have not developed a common language for ourselves in African lingua franca. And the former colonial powers do use this kind of thing, the British, French, things like that. They just don't let go of their former colonial powers, and they do lead to this thing. Therefore, in some instances, you may not, or you are unable to elect a chair of the African Union because he or she comes from an English-speaking country, or is being brought by the English-speaking countries, or by the French-speaking countries. And just to be open about this, who's the chair, Jim, what, the one who stayed for about 40-something years as the chairperson of the African Union. He stayed there for many years, and he came from the French-speaking countries. He's the son of Nalezo. They don't take us to the kind of Africa we want. The second matter is about peacemaking, peace negotiations, and ultimately peace and settlement. I'm happy that hostility has been established, because those among us within the African continent, doesn't matter which country, if people lose elections and they want to take over government by unconstitutional means, the military dictatorship, or they are rebels somewhere there in the corner, or they are in militia, and we don't know who's funding them, and we don't know what is their agenda. The only thing that we know is that when they take over an area in the DRC or in Somalia, is where you've got oil and the mineral resources, and then the defense like government. The only history now, I can only mention two countries. Mozambique could not develop because that rebel group was established just after 1975 when they got independence. From 1977 up to 1992 when they signed the Peace of Rome, Mozambique could not attend to issues of development. Much of the budget had to go to military, go to the Department of Defense. Angola, more or less the same thing. I'm just saying that peace enforcement, mercilessly, ruthlessly, and heartlessly, to the people who peddle unnecessary violence and other things, will have to be imposed. Now I'm using Harry Kwala's language. I think that is one of the things that we in Africa must remember, must happen, because peace is indeed going to be a condition in Ecuador. The second method is about history. This document says something about history, that there will be the importance of teaching history as understood by the African people themselves, so that you can embed that history, the kind of principles and values and identity of what exactly you are. You see, at the university, we studied four things. One of them was American history.
if you've read anything about manifest destiny in the United States, in the Monroe Doctrine, you will then know why the American think is the American and the right. We don't think in those terms. We don't think as either the South Africans first and the rest. I'm not sure if that has got imperialistic inclination. Or as African first and the rest. We don't think in those terms. So, quite clearly, the founders of Pan-Africanism, the values they enunciated and the many principles that must be embedded in that kind of history. We can't afford to be small Americans in our country, in the way we dress, the way we speak. So, can't do like that. And it doesn't matter that someone of Indian origin, African origin, Afghan, English, but as South Africans and as Africans, we've got to understand ourselves in that way. So, that history, for me, is a very important thing, starting in South Africa. Then, I will support you, Honorable Mfano, on that one. Well, you didn't say much about infrastructure, but I don't mind you not saying that, but I don't know which it has meant. A presentation about infrastructure and how it will assist the whole, both the SADC region and the whole African region, assisted by the coming in of BRICS, the New Development Bank, because its mandate is actually infrastructure. That presentation must be made to the Infrastructure Committee and then must find its way to Parliament. You must not have any South African who says, what do you want in Africa? Why do you want to build that bridge in the suit? Why building a railway in Karasala? But there must be an understanding of this North-South corridor. Whether it's that in Cairo, to South Africa, or from South Africa, and the leaders of Africa are appointed presidents who want to champion this. So, South Africans must be supportive to this, beyond the life of Zuma himself. So that's what we're talking 2063. So, I think that presentation for me will be important. The other matter was on, talking about history and talking about education. The other day we had the presentation that spoke about YALI, the Young African Leadership Initiative, which has been changed into Mandela Washington Exchange Program Fellowship. So, as you have asked that there, I want to repeat it. We can't have Amasota 10 picked by somebody to go to a certain country to study a certain curriculum in a certain university, and Utawanguti, they are going to be Pan-African and push the vision as understood by the founders of Pan-Africanism. That's dangerous. But one must make sure with the, no matter what university, no matter what school you went to, but you are true South African, you are truly African. So, we are going to help each other in front of me. Now, I'm going to invite some of your comments. By the way, some suggestions that were made by members, and I think they've got to be packaged thoroughly as part of the way forward. Because under what must happen at the joint sitting, Honorable Khadira said, and then we must hear people on that one, said that there is a need to invite former President Kenneth Kaunda, former President of Zambia, for two reasons. That he, among other countries, hosted many liberation movements, including the ANC, and ANAPO, and others. But also, he is part of what I will call the African patriarchy. Well, he's part of the African patriarchy. He's the founder member of the Organization of African Union. He was there in 1963, and the ICANN was inaugurated in 1964. Whether he wants to say his immigrants attend joint sitting of parliament, it's a different thing, but at least that we must invite a person like that, we must invite the clerk, we must invite former President Mbeki and former President Khalima. I would support that. Now, whether these are the only people is another thing. Yeah, just at the joint meeting. Now, one of Kenya spoke about traditional leaders, also joined one of Khadim about the faith-based organization. Now, this must be consulted. But whether you would want them in the sitting, because that sitting must be very different. You must have a full house, you must also have the flag of the African Union, very visible outside, and or all the flags, because you are debating something. Those kinds of inputs. So the challenge we have, I don't want to say we need a team, but we may need to be focused on how do we want to see that thing. So the programming committee must tell us some week or two, so that it can be thoroughly prepared for. I suspect that here in South Africa, we have underplayed Africa Day. Africa Day is 25th of May, just one of the holidays. No lecture, not much is said about it. So, that's why we speak with the way we speak. We say African, referring to other people, because they are within European. And some countries are very unkind to us, the way they say it, here in South Africa, particularly in Zimbabwe. They think, we think, we don't think black. We're not Negroid in our thinking. That's what they say. But the faith-based organizations, there was a question from Honorable Brother Clarity, from Honorable Kalyan, from the author of the document. She came to me and said she's apologizing. She's the author of the document you're referring to on page 6. That's our content advisor here, who Dineo Matan. And indeed, the question you ask, we must try to answer it here. That will be the role of the parliamentarians. Because when we go to the debate, assuming that some 3 or 4 members from international relations committee are going to debate, how do we guide parliament? Because one of us, or some of us, must say, the role of the parliamentarians in this agenda 2063 must be to do the following thing. I think one of them is to ensure that when they conduct constituency work, they deliver a lesson on this. That's why they must be workshops, they must be resourced with everything else, so must speak as one. You must not have a member of parliament who's speaking in Polokwane, and the other one speaking at my place, by the red. Ask a different thing to a specific thing. So, we must discuss what that role would be. But I also want to suggest that to the extent possible, so that we can move away from elitism and move away from saying, where is that information only if you know English? We may need some academics in different universities, some are here in Parliament, who must translate this document. You say, I want the material that you have, Ubuntu, but package that you had in the 26th century, and then have a Chivenda version, it's in the Red version, Sisu, the Chosla, all of this, except what they've done. So that we send this to our people, and then they're in line in the South African. And both this document, if there is a magazine dedicated to Agenda 2063, plus this presentation that you made, I know it is still at a conceptual stage, it is still evolving, but we must be able to send this to different libraries. Libraries, but I'm not sure about school libraries. So that we, let's say, the teachers. Because now, we didn't say that we're consulting teacher associations or teacher unions or teacher. On this one, because I suggest that the minister must address this before ever, or after, maybe she asked. You see, I would share about teacher, right? It can be history, but it can whatever. But if they have a person like the minister or if you can find him like the president, but I think the minister can be more obedient. Because we're going to focus on this one. Get a good representation of the teachers' union, not at a national level, in all the provinces, and don't exclude anyone. Say Africans are on a race, Ine, and the Natal teachers' association, SADU, all of them, bring them in there. We all have not said something about the Association of School Governing Bodies. And these affairs of these learners. And you know when Dr. Mswadi was MC for Education, and was MC for Education, and the minister was Naledi, and he just told us a big problem about Limpopo, that there were parents who were saying they don't want their children to learn Shitenda or Songa. Songa is Shangan, but Songa or Sipedi. They say, what are they going to do with this? But in South Africa, we speak English. Business and everything else conducted in English. You see, so you are saying, the unfortunate thing is that you need to know English, but you still need to be better, because when you can't be a small English man. Well, Kwanya. So, well, Kwanya, you can't speak to your own people. For instance, when we go to make some presentations on Agenda 23 in our constituency offices, I can't go there and be highly academic and speak English in my constituency. So the advantage is now, so that my MPs where you are from. So when we speak to our people, we translate the way we understand them, including the traditional leaders. So it's going to be very important. So let's think about the possibility of the minister addressing teacher organizations. Maybe in the same meeting, to say time, you can bring the association of school governing body. I'm not sure, but just to speak on Agenda 26. There was something I also thought about, where is I put it now? Oh, and that's the last letter. How are we consulting with the African diaspora? It's littered, I'm sorry for the word, it's littered in your United States, somewhere in Europe, in the Caribbean countries, and elsewhere. Particularly the international community within the African diaspora, because this document, we should say it's a finished product without soliciting their input. Because they will bring in other experiences from the world to impact on the document. I would imagine its intellectual richness will be very invaluable. You see, as Africa rises, Africa must rise intellectually. It's got to be very superior in arguing its own case. Anywhere else, in the United Nations, in the G7, G20, it's got to be a schooled Africa. So, to bring in that African diaspora, wherever they are, it needs to be important to what must say. Well, they think for us, but we are not part of them. Yeah, that's the last input I was making. Can we just discuss a little bit about the way some of the things were brought in and way forward, particularly my suggestion about how the sitting would look like, who must be there, the preparations towards that. But I'm not excluding other inputs. Welcome, we know that you've got the responsibility which is this committee. Most welcome. Yeah, can we invite input? Babu Khandere, followed by Kenya. That's the second round now.
Sure. I think that before we go to the second round, the department must respond to the issue today.
Oh, yeah.
Department? Chairperson, yeah, thank you. If I may just make this point, as a department, unless we're invited, and I'm not suggesting that we do it, but that we are invited, what the programming committee and parliament decides
With regard to the joint sitting, it's something for those bodies to decide. As I said, we will certainly make an input if we're invited to do so. No. To the joint sitting, we should be invited. The actual program, how it's formatted, and so on. Now, we agree with what the Honorable Khaira said about the process being at emphasis on trade unions, faith-based organizations, judiciary, and so on. Sandile proposed that perhaps that falls under the broad umbrella of civil society organization, perhaps not. But we look at that. But immediately, he started raising his points. He nudged me and said, DM, please don't forget the resources. We don't have an unlimited budget. Because when we invite these people to come to Pretoria, we carry the costs. Just please bear that in mind. But that shouldn't, you know, we should try as far as possible to have as many organizations and people participating rather than to be limited. So we agree with you. We also agree, Chairperson, that Kenneth Kowler must be invited. And as I see it, these are people who will be sitting in the gallery. And obviously we will pay tribute to their role, individually and collectively. And that applies as much to former presidents, some of them, Khalem Mukante and Ethelie de Klerk. I can only agree with the Honorable Maile when he says that this divide between the Francophone and the Anglophone and any other phone, it divides us here in Africa. We heard of the reform yesterday, and that we must form a united front and allow the language differences to divide us. And of course, to the list of people who must be invited, joint debate chair, I can only agree with Honorable Kenya when she says that Dr. Nkosana Dlamini Zuma must be at the top of those people invited. The executive secretary of SADC, her surname is Tax, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but yeah, she certainly must be amongst those invited. And then you go on and on and on. And others mentioned traditional leaders, South African Council of Churches, and so you go on and on. I leave Sandile to address aspects of those questions and comments as he sees fit. Baba Kalyan raised some very important questions which I wanted to address, Chairperson, with your permission. The first question she asked is, what is the role of Parliament and parliamentarians in this process, year 2062? And I think we should throw this open to the House, because it's for you to determine what role you are going to. I feel uncomfortable. If I were in your position, sitting there now, I would take offense if any department came to me and said, listen, you, this is going to be your role. Now, as a proud member of Parliament, you would take this. I certainly would. Why is the department deciding for me what my role is going to be? Whereas if you amongst yourselves debated and discussed what your role should be, that would make much more sense to me. And so I'm not trying to be difficult when I say this, but I think it's for you to decide what role you should play. The link between the APRM and Agenda 2063, I'm going to leave that to Sandile to address. So that's the link between 2015 development goals and Agenda 2063. The budget that's been allocated to Agenda 2063 is very small, but you have the figures. Now, the Honourable Mousami had the consultations with, for example, the youth inadequate. Probably not. I think what DERCO has tried to do is obtain delegations from youth organizations. And I'm sticking my neck out here saying probably hopelessly inadequate. We had a large group of youth
up at DERCON's headquarters. But inevitably there would have been some that were not invited or who may have been invited and didn't pitch. So that would be my response. The document is not convincing. Okay, take the point. Should there be an integrated continental economy? Yes. When you speak about Africa, that's an enormous challenge. It's huge. And on another occasion, when the media are not with us, I'll tell you why. Regional blocs have not shown any success, I agree. I came into this position, Jefferson, and that was one of the things I asked myself now. And my looking at it is that I tend to become really cynical. But there is one point I want to say, which arises from the points raised by the Honorable Musami. As Africans, we shouldn't be afraid to do introspection. And my experience as Africans is that we don't like to do it. However, whenever you do introspection, it's got to be cold, clinical, and brutally honest. So when you go out there and you speak to people who are not African about the situation in Africa, you can paint your own picture. But when we sit like this amongst ourselves, and we discuss the African situation, we shouldn't be afraid to be honest and say, look, the situation is what it is. It's just plain and simple, undemocratic. Situation in wherever else, and we must be honest about it. We tend to want to be sensitive about it. I don't know, you can talk about this. And I always say, well, why not? Why not? No, that's their problem. No, it's not. It's our problem. Because when the satellite hits the fan in this country, their citizens enter South Africa and say, you have to help me, I'm an African. And if that is the case, then why can't you and I discuss what's happening over there? Lesotho is a case in point. And the same applies to other countries, Jefferson, you raised the question of, the whole question of the infrastructure development in SADC and Africa. We agree. You will need to give us sufficient time to give that presentation of your briefing, because it's pretty extensive. And I ask that you just, don't have any other items on the agenda, if I may make that suggestion. You're quite right, Jefferson. Africa, just to come back to infrastructure, there are Gulf states. Oman is one of them, UAE is the other, and there's a few others, who've reached an agreement with states in West Africa, pretty substantial in the sum of money they're looking at, runs into billions, tens of billions, dollars, and they're looking at infrastructure development in West Africa, which is why I say the briefing presentation on this particular matter, we need to have a fair amount of time. Agenda 2063 is still a conceptual stage, that's right. And the intention, Chairperson, is to put together a compilation or a report flowing from all the engagements and inputs received, which brings me back to the question raised by the Honourable Minister. When we reach that point and we look back, will we be able to say we've covered the whole of civil society in South Africa? Probably not. I'm skeptical about that. So we need to go out and make the invitation clear to everyone, including the African think tank, to engage in the discussion, in the conversation of Agenda 2063, so that even if at the end of the day concede that we've not reached everyone, but that the inputs are such that we can at least say, okay, let's move forward.
Just before you proceed, that's what I wanted to add a question to the minister. did the president, the heads of state and government, say that each of the national legislatures of the member states must ratify, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word, because you see they discuss heads of state and government and they are really expecting. They then say that the national legislatures must say something about Agenda 2063 and say whatever it is, because money is passed there, some of which is going to assist Agenda 2063, your infrastructure and other things. Because if you've got a parliament that says, Minister of Foreign Affairs or President, why are you doing this? Because they have not thought it like this thing, it's just something else. And if they just saw earlier on in the presentation that by, you know, October, if you can, we can come back to that. Because I want that to assist us. What must Parliament do on that day? Just the thing of Parliament, must it just listen and say, okay, that's what the President is. Or it must say, we actually support all of the things that are mentioned today. Because ultimately the presentation must educate, but it must be pointed towards adopting the agenda in its entirety, or there must be some principal recommendations, or whatever. And it's important for us as a committee to be clear about that. Thank you.
No, Chair, my understanding is that we're not asking for Parliament or you as honourable members of this portfolio committee, just to give Agenda 2063 an understand and a blessing, like an almond, like the priest does. And then, you know, that's the end of it. I think we're looking at Parliament to make an input. And we're looking at other parliaments to do the same, so that at the end of the process, your input as parliamentarians and as National Assembly, NCOP, provincial legislatures, form part of the compilation of the report that will go to the African Union. That's my understanding. I don't want to see the joint debate simply being a symbolic thing. Sometime when Pops sits the Pan-African Parliament, they can have a symbolic thing. So I hope I've answered your question, Chairperson.
Thank you. Well, as long as Minister, you also mean it in Africa.
Thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, I think most of the key questions the Deputy Minister responded to. The other issue, Chairperson and Honourable members, is the question of once the document has been agreed to, is the question of domesticating it. I think that's where national parliaments would play a meaningful role in that. One of the key aspects in the AU processes is also the domestication of the AU decisions and declarations, so that then everybody can and then agree and buy into it. And countries are expected to basically report timely at the AU about the implementation of the AU decisions and declarations. I think the plan itself, Agenda 2063, would also be part of that process as well. That once agreed to, it has to be seen being domesticated and even at the level of the region and at the continental level. That equally distinguishes Agenda 2063 from all the other programs that have taken place before it. The question that Honourable Kalia asked about the link between the Africa Peer Review and Agenda 2063. Honourable member, I think Aspiration 3 and Africa of Good Governance, Democracy, Respect for Human Rights and Justice and the Rule of Law talks to the key aspects of the African Peer Review Mechanism. And at the same time, the African Peer Review Mechanism came in as part of NEPAD to basically address certain key elements. And the key, the important advantage, comparative advantage to this aspect is the fact that it's the only mechanism in the worldwide. There's not been any mechanism like this in other parts of the continent. It's an African mechanism that other parts of the world are beginning to want to imitate. But it forms part of the African, it's part and parcel of Agenda 2063. Hence I'm referring to the aspiration three, because it's actually part of that. Agenda 2063 and post 2015 development agenda, honorable members, the interpreting the Agenda 2063 takes into account the post 2015 development agenda. At the moment, for example, there is a common African position that will be articulated in New York during the discussions on the post 2015 development. So, and in this regard, our president is also a member of the high level panel on the post 2015 development agenda. So Agenda 2063 is inclusive of the common African position that will be engaged on in New York. There are even discussion around the plan, the review plan, the 10-year review plan, whether it should work along the same line as the 15-year review that was posted in the 15 bars, or should the committee should keep it to the 10-year plan. These are all the discussions that will take place at the level of the Committee of the State Government in January. So it is part of that. At the moment, with respect to the budgetary resources, we were using the resources of the department's resources, especially the budget of Africa Multilateral. And the money so far has been, I think it's standing at around about 1.2 million rand that we use from the budget, the department, the African Multinational budget. Going forward, there will be some representations to be made in order to ensure the inclusivity, and the requests need to be made around the budget, so that then I think all the key elements and the constituencies that the honorable members have referred to, that's very, very important that they be consulted, so that the ownership is undoubtedly, it is not doubted by anybody, that this is the problem that is people-centered and people-driven. And Chairperson, with respect to Honorable Mwasami, they talk about the African passport. This issue also came out in Swaziland during the meeting of the minister responsible for integration. The African passport and the scrapping of the visa. But there are other elements that are built into this. For example, if a person gets on the plane in Côte d'Ivoire and coming to South Africa, is there a link with the system in Côte d'Ivoire be able to communicate that there's such a person on the plane to South Africa? So the communication and the linkages between the systems, because there's also a security question around this issue. So it's an all-embracing issue that has to be taken into account. But there are discussions around the question of the African passport, the question of the abolishment of the visa. Well, countries need the necessary guarantees. That's what they were saying even in Swaziland during the meeting of the ministers responsible for integration, that they need the necessary security guarantees, that the systems are integrated and people are the security-wise, people are able to track down what's going on, so that there are no loopholes where some other elements may actually use it for their own purposes. I think that's what the essence of the discussion. Chairperson, I actually also had a question during the lobbying of the former chair of the current chairperson of the AU, when we traveled across the continent lobbying about her chairship of the African Union Commission. We went to one country chairperson where the talks about the Pan-Africanism was quite philosophically, and the head of state was very supportive of the chairperson of the AU, but however, he then indicated that you must just point, making the point, you must, he said, but there's a fear that we are having that the country across the Atlantic is not compatible, and he has given us instruction on how we should vote for the chair, for the chairship of the AU. So what I think the key element, everybody fully understands the importance of Pan-Africanism, but the element that is coming from the coast across the Atlantic that seeks to undermine Pan-Africanism and the Pan-African unity is still rearing its head. So it's something that agenda, the whole notion of Agenda 2063 will help, because the part of the agenda is to actually ensure that the resources are domestic. Our own national states, our own organizations across the board provide the necessary funds for Agenda 2063 and its implementation. I think that is the cushion that can actually help around some of these issues. So we have taken note of all the key elements that the committee is recommending, and we will certainly follow them up and implement accordingly. But what we also did, Chairperson, we also made requests in situations where we are unable to greet everybody, that our emails are available, the public diplomacy is available, that input can also be provided. We've put articles in the newspapers and in different magazines on Agenda 63 with a view to really polarize it so that there's a feedback coming from all the sectors of our society. Even if we are unable to reach them, but that they then be able to make meaningful contributions towards them. So we do receive some input. For example, some of the students who are doing a trick have asked some questions, have written some conversations on Agenda 2063 outside the formal session. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Scott. I now want to turn my attention to our members, just to look at the choice sitting and a few other things. One of them was the role of the MPs. I spoke about constituency work, and now you've just spoken about the youth number. I didn't want to talk about that. But could we look at the possibility of going to the MPs? That in addition to presenting Agenda 2063 to their constituency offices, and I don't know to whom we report if they get some input by packaging, because mainly MPs report to their chief whips. We must just refine a mechanism of getting the input from the MPs. But at least they must do something about that. But we could also request MPs to go and give a talk to the different radio stations in indigenous languages, including English and Afghan. Those who can speak good English, SAFM, but the different indigenous languages, go and talk about this. To the extent that I remember and I know, you reach about 93% of the population of South Africa when you talk on radio. And when you talk on TV, it goes back to a lesser percentage. When you put it in the newspaper, print or otherwise, it has a middle class, the educated, or even those who can afford to buy a magazine or a newspaper. So, radio stations actually give you a reach to the very deep rural areas. So, MPs could be persuaded also to play that role. Now, the first thing, Norman, open me in a bunch of food, Norman. Then, Mabud, why are you headless? Well, you don't have to answer that question. Yes, you have been naughty, you are phony. In the back, your mama's your station, because a premier minor, and don't eat or anything. You may need to work with other. How many are you? Can you answer that? How many are you?
We are seven,
actually. Who are assisting our committee? You are seven. I don't know who is your manager, but we could persuade Mtange Mina. After he joins the team, Mtange, let's
Nibor to Senate Kunsara Mara decisions, and Ama MPs general prepared in indigenous languages, Ukulis one and everything. In public domain, must just be awash and everything. Either before or after. But particularly after, and I guess that would be all MPs would be of the same volume of knowledge around this matter. Do you want to say something around it?
Yes.
That's part of the way forward.
Yes. Let me change it to the unit, because what happened is that we've got a radio unit inside, a radio section inside the unit, but the GCI as a radio is ideal for this kind of a program. What they do is connect with, I think, about 60 community radio stations in the country. You just buy time from GCIS, and then they put a satellite connection. All community radio stations, because this is quite a detailed program, and it needs a lot of time, as opposed to getting a 60-second soundbite on Ukhozi. It's very loaded with information that needs to be discussed and broken down. So let me take this proposal to the unit and see how best can we do it, and then I'll come to you and inform you on what the unit decided on.
Thank you very much. To the extent possible, the most influential radio station should actually give a line. It must be live, the one other thing. My partner is going to give a live. Someone has dedicated a radio station, the managers have spoken to, and tell us if you must speak to Tawudi, because Tawudi is not just for SAPC, for all the radio stations. If the program, they can carry it live, couldn't have Africa. So no one can tell us no only stories or data on Masango and Masango. That's hours, but by day, it was 2 hours, 1.5 hours. Pretty sure if one of the states has the state of the nation at time. So it's the joint sitting on Africa. If we have to impact on our society, then so this is serious. But come back to us on how all of the modalities can be worked out. Another
project
again on the way forward.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. On the way forward, I'll be to your office to speak with the office of the Speaker and the National Council of Policies and of the study, because we are writing on Friday on the 19th with out of town. So that even if the media guys have to go into this thing, we must know what is the shape of the deal that day so that they can be able to provide it accordingly. So that's what I'm asking for. As well as on the issue of the invite, we forgot the president of the then African Parliament who's here in Midras. I don't think you can make an omission out of that. And also, Chairperson, it does not preclude the sitting president of the country. I think we must also get a direct invitation. But we know that the Pastoral Committee cannot do that. It's only the office of the Speaker which can do that. I think that if you can fix that, Chair, I think that is informal what they are having this for that occasion, and then we have a hand down from there. Because we cannot discuss the whole day here, it's going to be impossible. Yeah. It's going to be impossible. That's why that if your office can secure the appointment of the Speaker's office, the National Chief Officers, and then put this proposal, that we want this day to be of significance in the history of the country. Because we invite you 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I think that you can put it in the sitting place very quickly. And then I think it will be a good day.
Para Munda.
I concur. Except that I just wanted to ask two questions. One is on the question of the radio we're talking about. I thought we're talking about day before, before that particular day, and propagating the information on the agenda to the people in the African language. This is what I thought you say. But that gentleman there was talking about beaming to various community radio. The question was, is this in the language of those people that it will be, or is it just for people who understand English when it is? That's the first question. The second thing I wanted to say, is it possible to have a priest that is going to have a state of that is going to be invited as well in this particular because, for example, you, we do hold the Angola, for example, I think that we need to invite people, the head of state of Angola, Tanzania, and I don't know which one is going to be there. I mean, before they become part of the government. I would think that it would be better to have that here as well. I'm not saying you can call all kinds of things, I mean, here, but at least those that are closer to us, we could provide it. So I wish I could get a clarification on that, on the propagating of popularize the agenda. Thank you very much. On the first one, I can speak to Minister Conference Bongi. So that's from Minister Hood. I don't know if it's kind of, but my understanding is what it is before and after and on the day. Something can be, and there can be an announcement around that before. I don't believe we will talk about that. Then on the day, then you can have 30 minutes or 1 hour live performance or listening. And the other, the MPs, work on that in the different organizations. And then and work out here with it. Who must be spoken to by who? If you say Kaudi must be spoken to, then you say by this particular authority. Then another one, we'll call all the registration manager and speak to them for the specific day itself. But work up the modularity in the campaign to us. Or if you say something, man.
No, sir, I was going to say, I'm going to draw up an ETF plan. As soon as I get the final details and the exact date, then it's going to be easy. And the issues of NAC will be included in that media plan, and then maybe the committee can assist as to which member is comfortable with which language and which radio stations we could have the member speak on. But I was just pointing out as an example to reach the greater number of South Africans using the community radio stations. But a medium plan to this regard will be drawn up, and I'll speak to my manager and we'll finalize and craft everything.
Thank you. Now, regarding the suggestion by Honorable Khadjebe, I suggest that I be assisted not because of my physical disability, but because of my intellectual deficiency. Just another male and female honorable member. Let me say three. I speak to the speaker or the speakership should have on this matter. Citizen can see for at least not just the chair. Well, whether we do it here now or do it somewhere, but I'll be happy for three at least. And I'm not sure why three, but we are saying. So you're answering the issue of the other heads of state. When am I doing a decision to answer that? Yes, over to you.
I think there we must be very careful because these countries are expected to run these processes in their own country. So we'll be behaving like a big brother in some sort. I don't think we can go there. We are inviting the president of the Pan African Parliament. He or she is here in the country. That one project, the secretary. You know, the CEO of SADC, I think she can take it for them. I think that after that, if you can look at the document, this thing will be built around the regional economic communities, RECs. So I think the SADC itself, after that, we have its own station. So we cannot really move ahead of that.
I think that we must do what is internal, what we can do, and then in a respectful way. I think that during the speeches, we really acknowledge the people who contributed to the liberation of this country. The brothers, please, they were there. Yes. We know the work, that one, way up this, because of Harare Liberation. So it means that someone in our, someone who is sitting there, must highlight the role President Robert Mugabe played in pushing South Africa to where it is today, but for the debate, but invited here, because in his own country, he is also expected to undergo the same process. So we cannot be big brother. So what I also say, Mr. President, on the issue of the budget, I think that 1.2 makes me shiver. But for a process, the budget review and recommendation and the process, I think that they must present something there. And so we know that the budget of this department is always low. So that if we need to have any request, we do it annually so that it can be as inclusive as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Now, the committee itself, in terms of outreach, as a committee now, the joint sitting has happened. Will this committee just fold its arms like the chair is doing now? Shouldn't we go to some provinces when we have 9 provinces? Let's think it through and see if we cannot all of us go to some provinces, or we could break into, we are 13, we're 11. We can break into a group of 3 or 4, then we have a team leader, and then that team, for instance, you go to Limpopo, and then you go to Mpumalanga, and then on the following day you go to another one, depending on how many you are, the other one they go to KZN, and then they go to Hotwat, and then they go to Mthambe. A day is in the morning and in the afternoon and the following day. As a portfolio committee, because I want this was the here stuff more on our shoulders than the other, at least to reach out. Of course, if you reach out to 3 or 4, you might get choose of going there and not going to the other. Now, but if you break into our team, so much the better. But we can think it through. So just putting it as a suggestion. I think, okay, I just want to close.
But now I'd like to say if the input is supposed to be on this declaration, because you might have said it's always done after the speaking. Not if you have seen that the member states are supposed to make input, not if they can say 6th of October in preparation for the January 2015 speaking.
And department, I want you to answer it because I want to raise your hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. The inputs are not made on the declaration because it's already been done and signed for by the head of state and government, in Addis Ababa. The inputs are on the conceptual framework document on Agenda 2063. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. At this stage, I really, on behalf of honorable members, and official, I want to thank Deputy Minister Lenders and Mr. Skark very profusely for their very, very good presentation. And thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for your intervention. There is this document. There is a document that Ross. And I hope Bongiri also. It's the recognition of South Africans abroad. So it speaks to what earlier on was alluding us to. There's also another document from the department, the evidence of the department. Agenda 2063 arrived, and it has all the aspirations there, and it will assist the members when they make presentations for outreach, debate, and whenever they give a talk everywhere else. And with that, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. If you have some last words, you are invited to do so.
Just thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Lambert. Okay. Now, we have minutes. Yeah, Rambo Minister. Minister, who executive? I can go for it, welcome.
After my minute.
Are we correcting to adopt the minute?
Yes. Yeah. Maybe we're not correcting. Mkhalapa is not here. Pulling a leg.
Honourable members, we have the minutes of the 9th July 2014. Did you circulate them before?
Yes. I'll put them in.
Yes, sir, they were circulated before, sir, for the meeting. Before this, in this morning?
No, this morning, yes, sir.
Okay. There you have the minutes, the date, the time, the venue, the agenda for that day, the committee members who attended, the second page referred to matters that we discussed, and then we've got page 3. I don't know whether members want to go page by page, but can we speak to those minutes, because ultimately we would want to recommend that we adopt them. Honorable Kalia?
Just like to make a correction on page 2. The chairperson gave a background, not the foreground, the background in which the discussion was to take place. And then under 3.
Oh, sorry. The minute
9 July 2014. Welcome. Point 1, line 2.
Point?
Point 1, welcoming and opening remarks, yeah. Line 2.
Yeah.
For background, I think is the correct word, not a foreground.
Yeah, exactly.
And then point 3, the second paragraph, which reads, the DA and the EFF noted that it supported the draft report, however, withheld their support. We did not withhold our support, we reserved.
Oh, yes.
Yes. The correct wording is the reserved until caucus approved.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I have no other comments and I support, I move the minority adopted.
Thank you very much for the correction. Honorable Monsani.
Thank you. So I'm just checking, this was the first meeting that we held, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe not.
Not
the one where we actually discussed something.
Thank you, Chair. The minutes in front of you are the minutes of the meeting when we adopted the draft report.
Okay.
On budget vote.
Oh, okay. No, I wanted to thank you. I want to just clarify the point on, I'm asking because there were minutes where it was outstanding. The issue of the report that were to be presented, the report of the ARF, etc., that were to be presented. And that was the issue that was in contention regarding the support for the budget. So why I'm asking clarity for the Secretary, whether the issue of the report was in the minutes of the meeting prior to the minutes, if they are not, if they can be included in this, because it was not only the Democratic Alliance and the EFF, it was also COPE that were in that meeting. And the other thing is that it wasn't consensus that reserved the right. The reserved the right was the DA. The EFF said that they would hold their support, and also I would want to remove the second full stop from the minutes that is there. So that is the clarity I wanted to provide in terms of the inclusion of the subjectivity, because the issues at the time does not provide clarity on the issue of the report that was not included in the previous minutes of the previous meeting. Are you following me, Secretary? I'm just, okay, so through your chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Maybe you can assist to answer the other question. But with regard to the issue of the ARF, I gave a ruling that we needed to proceed with regard to the budget of 2014 and 15, which was a matter before us. I said that that matter of the ARF belongs to 12 and 13, and that the minister will be invited to make a presentation to the portfolio committee. And I have since presented that matter. I wrote to the minister to find a day and time to present to us. So that's how the matter was concluded. So the minister is actually still owing us that presentation. And that decision is kept in the minutes before this one. Yes, it is there. Any other thing? Montanella is an answer. Okay.
All right, thank you, Chair. I'm just appointing Honorable Kanya that we adopt this minister as a good reflection, because the issues raised were on the minute of the 2nd of July. That said, that issue had arisen, and then concluded it the week of the session.
Thank you, Honorable Kadere. Let's now focus on the minutes of, the proposal and the second, I'm in order. Yes.
So with the changes that I have also suggested, apart from Honorable Kalyan's proposal, thank you. There was also the scope that was in that.
What did they do? Did they reserve they or did
they have? They would have their support. That was your next step.
What did they do?
They did not object. I think that we can rely on the secretary to give us the... Okay, no, it's fine.
What did they do?
I don't think Adam will concern myself for calling what myself for the best. And suddenly, and once it was on the 7th of July, the minutes were changed. And the minutes were moved and somebody. Now if you open up for that's another case. I don't know why I'm doing it now. So that code is not even there. Thank you.
Okay. But you are sitting clarity on the matter of the ARF. And noting where is the house, whether these minutes are actually not omitting that net. And we'll answer. Well, on what COPE's view was on that day, but I guess it was reserved and withheld is fine. But let's go to the minutes of the 30th July 2014. There is your page one on the venue, on the time on the agenda, and the attendance, the persons who attended, and page two on the matter that we looked into, the presentation. The minutes are everything, and then these minutes are accompanied by a report, because they were presenting on a whole range of branches, on the branches of the department, Africa multilateral, bilateral, Europe, America, Caribbean, East Asia, all the branches, and it was really a very good day on that day. Do you ask them any corrections, any clarification questions, any further questions? Kalia. Are you referring to the minutes or the Gulprasala?
I refer to both because the report is supporting the minutes, Sambo for the adoption for the minutes and the report. And may I just say, the very detailed, the comprehensive support. Well done.
Thank you. Allah Kalyan moves for adoption. Another word, that would be? The meeting is adjourned.
and thank you very much, Honorable. There is no lunch. The lunch will be in your pocket. Lunch. You want to get lunch in your pocket, not in the committee's pocket. Only gave you. Sorry about that.
Yeah.